What is up, Javier Jase, man with the plan, Argentinian action figure. Happy Tuesday. How are you, man?
Doing great. Very, let's say, anxious, impatient to see what the end of the day holds for America. Watching from abroad to decide whether or not I'm flying to Vegas on Sunday. Yeah.
Speaking of Vegas, you know what I wanted to do with this podcast? Also, hi, everybody. My name is Elliot Lane. You know what I wanted to do with this podcast was make this your betting book, your book for which states pass cannabis legalization today. What's the over-under? Does Missouri pass or does Maryland pass or do both pass? Can you nail them all correctly? Javier, any insights?
The thing is swag for the person who gets the most answers right. You got to bet on all five. It's like a lotto or something. You got to go yes or no, like yay or nay on whether they pass or not on all five states voting today.
Ooh, can we list them? It's Missouri, Maryland, Arkansas. Why am I blanking on the next two? Yeah, it's Dakota.
So it is Arkansas. Yeah. Maryland, Missouri,
North Dakota.
And South Dakota. I'm gonna
the two Dakotas
in the comments.
Ooh, that's a good question, Javier. You're the man here. How do we track the polls or results?
Benzinga.com/cannabis. Where else?
That's what I'm saying. Set you up for it. Come on, that was beautiful. Rustic Kale, Travis Owens, Eric Rock. What is cracking, y'all? Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Cannabis Insider. Y'all, I don't think we have one today, but Javier has been doing some mean product reviews. Yes, so make sure you go and check out previous episodes to hear what he thinks. He's done Puffco. Yeah. You did some cool pipes last time.
Some actual product reviews, not just paraphernalia in Vegas.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait for that. And honestly, maybe a little after-hours review session if you guys want to tune into that. Kristen Rhodes, what's up? Welcome in. But Javi, it has been a busy day, a busy two days in cannabis. The earnings snowball is rolling downhill and getting bigger. We have some winners and we have some clear losers of earnings season so far. We are not here to pump nor tell you to dump stocks. Cannabis is in waves and it's in a tough time right now. So take that for what you will. That being said, GTI started out, and we talked about them last week, looked pretty good. IIPR the same. Curaleaf, I think, is down on their earnings. But let me tell you who is winning right now is Grow Generation. I think up between, I think it's like close to 30% on their earnings report today.
There's an easy way to find out.
When I checked earlier, albeit I've not checked. Oh, wow. Look at the red. They dropped back, apparently. But the GRWG is their ticker on the NASDAQ. They hit a nice little spike today. I am curious what's happened since I checked earlier, though, if it loads. Should I keep talking so this doesn't get awkward?
That is not it. It's GrowGen,
GRWG, right?
GRWG.
Yeah. Regardless, we've had some others. We had MariMed. I think they were up like 2 or 3%. There you go. See, there's the spike for GrowGen. See, I'm not crazy. Kind of some bull and bear flags there. You had MariMed, who was up 2 or 3%. Were GRWG fins that good? No, to be honest with you, Rusticale, but the decline slowed down drastically. Yeah, the revenue still dropped. However, they dropped much less than the trends were suggesting. So and maybe that's the sign of a company that is potentially bottoming. I don't know, Javi, what do you think?
We've been talking about MariMed for a while now, right? I know that they're trying hard to restructure. I appreciate the efforts. It seems like a lot of the stocks have bottomed already, to be honest, too.
Well, let's not get too excited here.
I hope so. I was particularly interested in Curaleaf, though. CURLF.
They didn't drop a lot, but
revenue was up. But gross profit was down. Mm-hmm. Adjusted EBITDA was up as well, right?
And matching GTIs. So like from the industry, from the financial industry, a lot of people talk about GTI's balance sheet being the best out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
But Curaleaf, I mean, coming in with the exact same EBITDA numbers.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Super strong analysts are pretty bullish as well. Pablo Swanich at Cantor Fitzgerald, as per usual, good friend, maintained an overweight rating, but as also per usual, except for what he did last week with GTI, he lowered his price target from 13.50 to $13.
You took the words out of my mouth. Pablo Zwanich did what Pablo Zwanich does and remains overweight and says, but you know what? I'm going to tweak that price target just a tad lower. So listen, Curaleaf performed. We actually get to speak to a member of the Curaleaf team today. Very excited to have Kate Lynch, EVP of Marketing, with us for the company today. We're also going to be speaking with Jason Beck, who of DNA Genetics. But Javier, I think we're going to be speaking with him about his story, policy, a big time to talk about policy. What a day to chat about it. It's going to be a cool show, man. But with that being said, I'm going to turn it to you. Let's rapid fire a few headlines.
Jim Cramer came out saying he's bullish in cannabis stocks ahead of the midterm elections, and he says you should be buying Tilray Brands, TLRY, and Canopy Growth, CGC. He says their time has come. Other interesting stories you should go check out on Benzinga.com/cannabis. What happens to cannabis bills if Republicans take the House and Senate? Which is also something our good friend Jason Beck will be discussing briefly. We also had a very cool exclusive out of High Times, which decided they will grow and produce their own cannabis products following the acquisition of the assets of licensed producer Moxie in California. Very, very cool stuff there as well. Lordi, the singer, revealed her album Solar Power was inspired by weed. Friend Drescher talked about marijuana and cancer. We had a very, very cool chart on consolidation and whether or not, if it's inevitable in the fragmented cannabis industry with our good friends at Viridian Capital Advisors. So go to Benzinga.com/cannabis to check that out. And of course, results out of Cronos Group, that is CRON, not very good out there. And finally, LL Cool J's Rock the Bells will launch a weed lifestyle brand via a partnership with House of Kush.
Now, Javi, can you clarify something? Because you've been in this industry longer than I have. You know more than I do. And I'm happy about that. I am. I say that in all seriousness. So what I want to know from you is specifically about Cronos Group. They have been in this industry a while. Mm-hmm. CRON is a ticker that I have seen since I first came to the cannabis space. Their revenue numbers continue to not overwhelm me.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what their growth model is. What do we look for from Cronos Group?
That's a good question. I think it's one that management has been asking as well, right? They struggle to find a model. They struggle to remain a top player in Canada. Overall, I mean, I don't dislike the
I don't either. Yeah, no, it's not about disliking or even liking them. Honestly, I am just curious, as an investor, how do I look at Cronos Group? Do I look at them as a tier one, or do I look at them as somebody who is competing with tier ones for market share, like an Oxley?
It once was a tier one, I would say that. Right now, it's a tier two in Canada, in my opinion. Tier one are very clearly defined. Right nowadays, it's like Canopy and Tilray, and that's about it. Maybe High Tide, if you want to add a Canadian.
All right. I like High Tide. You guys know I like High Tide. I like High Tide. I like Village Farms. I mean, honestly, there are some Canadian stocks out there that I'm a big fan of. Thoughts on S&DL. I feel like people are just throwing me softballs right now. No, not softball, Gary. I actually really like S&DL. I think what they have done, I've said this multiple times on the show. In fact, Javier could probably say it for me at this point. Is that I think what they've done since they achieved that meme stock status has been superb. I do. I think the takeovers that they've done, the assets that they have acquired from Valens to Zenabis, to entering the U.S. market. I mean, what they have done, in my opinion, is incredibly strong. So that's my opinion of SNDL. I 100% agree with you. They will be one of the largest Canadian companies out there.
Gary J is on board with your
view. I don't know how you look at them and say over the past 2 years, they have not just massively improved. I don't. I love them personally. I'm not saying, like, I'm not pumping them. I'm just saying performance of the last 2 years has been spectacular.
And they're asking about Wheatmap's MAPS.
You answer that one.
Well, interesting restructuring results. Iffy, new CEO. They will be getting a new CEO soon. I am keeping an eye on them. They continue to command the largest market share among all these media companies as it relates to driving.
Interesting sales. Number. They're up 1,100 monthly paying subscribers for year over year. So everybody's going to look at their revenue numbers, but their user base is actually it's 25% larger than it was last year. So I mean, and that's something to point out.
Look at that stock.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. Well, is this a buying opportunity? That's the question you have to ask.
I say yes. Not a recommendation, but definitely my vote is on yes. Just like yours is on SNDL, mine is on Maps. I wish.
Mine's not on Maps. All I'm saying is SNDL's effing power player, man. VFF took a big hit halfway through the day. Aren't they the top tier one right now? I forget which analyst, but they listed, I think it was Pablo, listed them as the leading Canadian company. Maybe it was another analyst. But VFF, they have strong sentiment right now. Obviously not reflected in the market. So don't quote me, Rusticale.
Nothing is reflected in the markets right now.
I know. I am paying attention to VFF earnings. I always do. VFF was my original SNDL. I was talking about VFF every week for at least a year. Javi remembers. All right, man. Back to you. What other things before? We have 1 minute before we need to get to our next interview.
No, man. Let's get to the interviews. I want to hear all about the elections and what is going on in the policy world with Mr. Jason Beck.
First of all, apologies, Jason. I said DNA Genetics, but you are, in fact, here representing Highest Republican, best name we have interviewed in quite some time.
Yes. I am the Highest Republican. You can go to thehighestrepublican.com, and you can find me there.
The Highest, right?
Just highestrepublican.com.
Highestrepublican.com. I love it. Yep. Well, Jason, tell us about you, man.
So I am the longest continuous retail operator of cannabis in the United States. I started back in 2001. I served on Terrence Hallinan's Medical Cannabis Task Force, and that was the initial group where we created all of the policies that incubated the cannabis industry at its infancy state. When Kamala Harris was our district attorney in San Francisco, I also served on her medical cannabis task force and was invited in 2004 from a recommendation from the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco to the city of West Hollywood as a credible operator to come down and open up in West Hollywood. And I'm often credited with bringing cannabis to Southern California.
How do you get to that position where you know, the higher powers are summoning you to help them with cannabis policy, where they're calling you to be an operator? And how do you even get interested in policy, considering your background?
Well, you know what's funny is my background was definitely never in policy. I just always understood as soon as I entered the cannabis industry that cannabis was a political issue. And if you don't know how to play politics, you're not going to know how to play cannabis.
Well said.
It's a two-prong approach, and you have to hit it from both angles if you want to be able to succeed and have longevity. I mean, I've been around. I've owned and operated dispensaries since 2001. I don't know anyone that's done it that long. And it's been one hell of a ride. I've been raided 3 times by the Drug Enforcement Administration. I fought pretty much every single governmental branch of government that you can fight within a state as well as on a federal level. And it's been one hell of a ride.
Yeah.
So you're saying people now in the cannabis space have it pretty easy, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they do. Without a doubt.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, honestly, I was in elementary school in 2001, right? And by the time I got into the cannabis industry in 2013, people were already complaining about legalization. It's like, dude, relatively easy.
The fact that kids never nowadays don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to be profiled by law enforcement for wearing a cannabis leaf on their T-shirt and be automatically subject to search and seizure is a big difference from where I grew up to where we are today.
So can we talk a little bit about your perspective on licensing? Because you have been in it since a license was not...
I helped create a lot of the initial licensing processes.
How do you feel that's reflected in today's industry? You have limited license, you have unlimited license. Where do you see these states succeeding? Like, what structure is the correct one since, you know, you were around when this first started and helped start it?
I mean, I think the correct structure overall, I mean, I don't even know if a state has actually done it right. I mean, California hasn't done it right overall in legalization. I think we're going to see a lot of the same mistakes that happened in California happen in New York with just some other little twists. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be a market that I'm definitely going to be paying close attention to in regards. I think the most robust market in the country is probably Florida. But Florida probably has the lowest quality, but yet they have the highest valuations on everything and in a very limited market space. And so I think it's somewhere in the middle between Oklahoma and Florida is where that comfortable, cushy spot would be.
Interesting. I would not have expected you to say Oklahoma in that sentence.
Well, I mean, Oklahoma to me is like the farthest left, like the loosest. Like, to me, it's like basically pre-legalization days in Oklahoma. And as far as California is concerned, it's like, it's basically, you can, you know, it's almost like DC, like you can self-certify as a patient and just go and do whatever. And then they had everyone that was just buying all these different ghost licenses. And now now the Oklahoma Sheriff's Department is investigating over 1,000 license cultivations for ghost ownership. And so that's going to be interesting to see what happens out there as well.
Yeah, that's insane. Now, let me ask you, one of the things, you know, we're discussing earlier is, you know, at least sitting where I am abroad, right? You know, we always thought of Republicans as the conservative side of America, right? The kind of party affiliation that would mean that a person would not be for weed. how does that look from your perspective, right? Like, how is this a partisan or nonpartisan issue?
Well, cannabis, there's no one political party that owns the issue of cannabis. All right. I think that's one thing that people need to understand is that cannabis is a green issue. It's not a red or a blue issue. This is an American issue. And it is a matter of our national economy to help improve our jobs and industry and just bringing manufacturing jobs back to America is something that we desperately need to do. And that's something I think the hemp industry is going to be really big at.
So, playing on your name here, I have to ask, because I report on like 5 minutes of news every morning called Cannabis Daily. And a lot of it is split right down the middle, politically and legislatively, and stock updates. So quick plug for me. But that being said, Jason, the Republicans, man, it has been super interesting because Republicans in Congress, at least the ones that we hear from, are generally friends in the industry. You have your Dave Joyce, you have your Brian Mast. But when you look at those campaigning, it is very much, at least from the ones that are talking about it, there is a stance of being against it. Do you expect that stance to continue when they're in office, or is this just to get into office?
Well, I think that's a misread. In all honesty, I think that's a misread because when they're campaigning, they're running on issues that pertain to the voters within that district. Okay. And so when you look at national polling, this is one of the things I tell people often is one of the reasons why cannabis polls so high as far as favorability, but never gets any action on the Capitol Hill front is because the fact that when the general public is polled on what are your top five issues that you're most concerned with, cannabis is never in those top five. Never. Even though a majority of Americans support descheduling of cannabis.
Totally. Totally. People are thinking about inflation
exactly.
On a national scale,
yep.
The troops. And then it's like, you know, the pothole next to my house, whether or not I'm getting clean water,
exactly.
Whether or not my city council is permitting whatever I like or dislike near my house or my school district.
Whether or not I can afford gasoline to get to work next week. You know, those are all the what do they call them, tabletop issues.
So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about the Highest Republican?
Yes.
You know, and what you're doing there, and, you know, obviously so, there's a statement there.
So basically, I worked for a number of years in local and state politics here in California. And I finally got sick and tired of state and local politics. And I was like, you know what? I'm so over this. I just need to focus on the federal side. And so at that point in time, I partnered up with Congressman Rohrabacher, who was out of the 48th district in California. And I became his point person on cannabis policy and messaging. Together, we came up with the Rohrabacher FAR Amendment, which is the federal appropriations bill that prohibits the DOJ and DEA from extrapolating federal funds to go after state licensed cannabis businesses. And that single piece of legislation has been a budget writer every year going forward ever since we first passed it. And that is the only piece of federal legislation that has allowed the industry to grow into what we all see it as today.
I have two questions related to the elections. One is more general, one is more specific. Let's go with the specific one first. Arkansas, Maryland, Missouri, North Dakota, and South Dakota all voting for or against cannabis today. What are your predictions for each one of these states?
Missouri is very contested, so I'm going to say that probably doesn't pass. Maryland, I'm expecting that to pass. Arkansas, I don't think that is going to pass. I think there's a lot of... similar issues with Arkansas, I think, in regards with Missouri as far as special interest trying to control it. So I know there's a lot of activists on the ground that are not happy with those. And then as far as the Dakotas, I want to say they're both passed, but something's telling me in the back of my head that they worded it some way to where it's like a tricky bill. And so the odds of it passing are very slim. But I want to say that I think that they will both pass.
And the follow-up is on the federal level. What happens if Republicans take over the House and Senate? What happens if Democrats retain the House and Senate? Is it any different? Is it the same for cannabis policy on the federal level?
Well, I think it's definitely the same either way because neither party's getting anything done for us. So, you know, that's just you know, we're not going to have safe banking. We're not going to get any of this stuff that our industry desperately needs. And so the reality of that is, you know, I think ultimately the Republicans are going to take the House. I think they'll probably have like a 34-seat majority in the House. And I think the Republicans are going to take the Senate. I think it'll probably be a 53-seat majority in the Senate is my prediction.
I have one more question for you that's a little bit more went on a loop in my head, but regarding Mitch McConnell with the farm bill. You know, there's some,
I call him Marijuana Mitch.
Marijuana Mitch.
Does he really legalize cannabis, even though he doesn't think that he did? Because the only difference between cannabis and hemp is absolutely nothing but an arbitrary 0.3 THC number, because in the Controlled Substances Act, it's still listed as cannabis sativa L for both definitions of the plant. So therefore, it is the exact same thing.
So, and this is exactly, thank you for saying that. That's great context for this question. Is the hemp industry, or maybe we'll go more towards what we'll say the rare cannabinoid industry coming out of the hemp space, with Delta 8, Delta 10, 18, 19 other rare cannabinoids. They don't even, you ask the Delta 8 provider, they say they're not cannabis, which, you know.
They're cannabis. In my opinion, they're cannabis. They're a psychoactive substance. And it's also, in my opinion, one of the Achilles heels, I would say, that the industry has because of the lack of regulation in regards to those substances and those being sold as over-the-counter products in gas stations across America.
Well, and that's exactly what I want to ask you is what is kind of a wrap up here. What happens to that industry once cannabis as a whole goes more federal?
Well, I think that all depends on the policy of what kind of policies are enacted overall, because that's what's going to dictate the commerce on how people are able to consume. Do we have a very restricted market where something like the States Act, where commerce is hampered by state lines, which keeps prices artificially high on the consumer? Or do we have something that is a fair and balanced market where we have interstate trade and open commerce and production states and consumption states? But I do want to speak one thing about this that I think is really, really important that I think your viewers all need to know in regards with whatever happens in the election, Republicans, Democrats, whatever is whatever. The biggest problem that the cannabis industry faces is the fact that our president, Joe Biden, wants to reschedule cannabis and is pushing for that. And the reality of it is this, is that if there is any rescheduling at all whatsoever, it would be the drastic blow to the cannabis industry. It would wipe everything out, because at that point you would bring the FDA, as far as an enforcement bureau, into the conversation. The FDA already has drug preclusion on CBD for Epidiolex and THC for Marinol. Not to mention, there's also the Food, Drugs, and Cosmetic Act. There's not a single product on a cannabis shelf that would not fall under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And there's going to be zero companies that are going to be able to pass an FDA regimen in order to make their products FDA compliant to be able to actually be to sell. So we have to deschedule or bust. There is no other option when it comes to this. Any form of rescheduling will be the biggest blow that the cannabis industry will see, and we will basically all blow away.
Well, it seems like the trying to support the small business and get away from the big business would not happen if it rescheduled.
So if it goes into reschedule, that you automatically hand the entire cannabis industry into the hands of the pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. and there is no more cannabis industry.
Awesome. Well, Jason, any final thoughts here, man? Anything that we can look toward today, look for the Highest Republican, about your operations in California, anything you want to leave us with here?
I saw some of the stories you guys covered today. I know we had Jordan on from the CEO of Moxie. I have a daily news show as well that we put together called High at 9 News. It's America's number one daily cannabis news show. You can catch us at 9 a.m. Pacific, high noon on the East Coast. 5 p.m. in the UK, we're global, baby.
There you go. Going global. Jason Beck, the Highest Republican, at Jason Beck 420 on Twitter, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram. I think Instagram's down. Something happened with my phone. I'm not sure what's going on with it.
Meta. Hashtag Meta, baby.
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? But did you guys see Elon's tweet today?
Which one?
Oh, man. He threw one out there today. Can I read this?
While you're, yeah, please. While you're finding that, his mother trashed Benzinga today on Twitter.
No way.
Really?
Yeah. So his mother called us FUD, and I was like, hey, no press is all press is good press, right?
Yeah. here we go. I have the tweet up here right now from Elon. He says, to independent-minded voters, and this sent the Twitter world as scarce today, he says, shared power curbs the worst excesses of both parties. Therefore, I recommend voting for a Republican Congress, given that the presidency is Democratic.
Whoa.
What do you guys think about that?
I'm surprised he came out saying anything that goes along party lines. I do think it makes sense. I will not say which party.
I support that.
You can imagine.
Yes.
The liberal-leaning guy that I am.
It's all good, man. I love all my liberal friends.
Hey, we all coexist here.
Exactly. We all, at the end of the day, all want the same thing. We all want to have safe places to raise our families. We all want to have good weed and amazing food.
Good weed, amazing food.
And a high quality of life.
Awesome. Well, Jason, I love that, man. What great thoughts to leave us on. Appreciate you being here today. And we will talk to you more another time, my friend. But until
Thanks
then.
So much. Stay blessed. Make sure to register to vote. Whatever you do today, make sure that you vote. It's a big day in America.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Talk to you soon, Jason. Awesome. Great interview. Appreciate that. Next up, let's jump right in, Javi.
Yes, please. We're strapped on time. Let's get it and let's do it fast.
All right. Kate Lynch, EVP of Marketing from Curaleaf. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
We can, yes. A little bit of floating head action, but actually, honestly, this is a podcast. It's totally fine. That being said, Kate, you work for Curaleaf. You work for one of the biggest companies in the world that sells cannabis. How did you come to be at Curaleaf?
I'm trying to change my background as we speak. Is that working?
Yeah, that is perfect.
I'm in the dark now, floating head in the dark. So I had the pleasure of joining Curaleaf about 4 years ago. I've been in the industry for about 9 years. Frankly, entered the industry a bit haphazardly when a former boss asked if I wanted to join the medical cannabis community. And I said, what are you even talking about? And have been enjoying the ride ever since. But yeah, joined Curaleaf about 4 years ago and have really enjoyed the culture and the adventure of building what is now a global cannabis company.
Wow.
The globalist.
The globalist. So okay, talk to us about marketing for an MSO. I mean, there's gotta be a lot of different levels to this. So I don't wanna be too broad nor too specific here, but I mean, let's start with the markets. Let's start with the regions. I'm assuming you lead marketing for all these different states, all these different restrictions. I'm sure your job can't be an easy one.
So it's tricky. You know, it's this interesting opportunity as a marketer where, you know, 8 years ago, it was very easy whereby you had product to sell, you would sell it. Now it's become a lot more competitive, and being in, you know, 20 different states is like being in 20 different countries here in the US, where every regulatory framework is very, very different. So if you were to launch a product across 15 markets, it's 15 different labels, 15 different packages, 15 different, you know, words that you can use, you know, to market. So it's exciting, challenging, but it has come a long way, I have to say. You know, when I introduced the idea of branding a product 8 years ago, it was almost heresy. And now we're competing with what we consider to be, you know, CPG brands in the making and really more highly sophisticated products and brands. And we're excited to be in the running for that.
Can I do a follow-up real quick, Javi? Sorry.
Yes, do it. Double down.
So you mentioned the CPG aspect. Right. So this to me, we get differing opinions on CPG and cannabis literally every week. Right now, you know, in terms of what people will buy, it's just cheap on shelf product. They buy it in a paper brown bag if they could. I'm sure you don't agree with that. But can you tell us where we are in our development of an industry to a full on CPG based market?
I think it depends on the consumer segment we're talking about. You know, there is a large consumer segment that doesn't necessarily need the sophistication of a CPG platform. They know what they want. They know the strains they want, the potency they want. They know the category that they want. And they're very easy, frankly, to market to. You don't really have to tell them much other than the quality of the product. Then there's new consumers that we're going after that have no idea what they're looking for. They don't even necessarily know that they need cannabis or want cannabis for what they need. So that is where the CPG comes into play. And, you know, when we talk about formats like gummies and chocolates and ready to serve seltzers, that's where we're talking about bringing new consumers into the category and helping them understand how cannabis might be able to address some of their needs. And that's where the low potency products have become very effective for us. We launched a ready to drink seltzer in Massachusetts, and we're seeing 50% of the consumers buying that product are consumers that are new to the category. Mm. So the CPG, while it is probably a small segment of the consumer base today, I think that's going to be the future of the growth of the industry. But we still, you know, flower remains 70% of our categorical sales today. And like I said, that is a very sophisticated consumer.
Talking about flower and a little bit about what you just said about people not necessarily knowing they want or need cannabis, right? And that doesn't only apply to newbies, right? And I want to share a brief story just because it resonated with me, what you just said, right? Last night I was hanging out with my best friend. Among my best friends, there are two guys who are clearly the heaviest smokers. And I'm talking like heavy smokers, several joints a day. And this one friend tells me yesterday, hey, I've been doing like a bit of a break. I want to cut down on smoking. I want to have a kid, you know, but I'm having night sweats and nightmares. And that is fine. That is normal. You know, it goes away after a few days. But I'm also having like body aches and headaches. And I'm taking ibuprofen and I hate it. And I go like, have you even tried with cannabis, like CBD drops? The guy hadn't even considered cannabis as an alternative other than smoking it, right? And I found it very interesting, right? How it's not just newbies who are not aware of the different formats and delivery methods, but even the most experienced of consumers go like, okay, if it's not a joint, it's nothing. Sorry, you froze there. I thought you
were. Go ahead.
No, you go, please.
It's an interesting perspective and one we haven't spent quite a lot of time thinking about, because we're thinking about the other consumer who hasn't considered cannabis for some of their need or mood states they might be going after. But I think there's still so much education that needs to be shared and communicated, which is tricky, frankly, because making claims around any of the efficacy of the product as it pertains to solutions for different medical conditions or behavioral conditions is very, very tricky. So I think one thing that we find effective in building our sort of community bases is word of mouth and people sharing their stories and saying, this is what worked for me really well. We can't necessarily tell or make those claims, that we can certainly build platforms for other people to tell their stories with cannabis. But I've seen the development of the formulations and products, increase significantly over the years. We're talking about now mixing minor cannabinoids with each other, the CBNs with the THCs and CBDs with the CBGs to address different need and mood states. I have the fortune of working with scientists who are working with medical institutions to actually do some clinical testing on how these cannabinoids can affect different need states. So again, we have to be very careful with how we talk about the efficacy of cannabis, but we have brought a lot of new consumers into the space based on how they find it to be a better solution than alternatives they would find either over the counter or, maybe in a liquor store.
And I have a curveball for you now, and it's related to marketing and being careful. When the whole issue with Russia and Ukraine started, a lot of people brought up, Boris Jordan and his relationship with Russia. And I spoke to him, and I did a balanced article that wasn't across, along any party lines or anything. It was like, here are the facts, right? You're saying things that are just not right. But people got very aggressive. I've gotten a lot of hate mail after that. How is it, to manage marketing when issues are as tricky as this one? Like, how do you go at marketing and manage communications when you're facing a bunch of trolls?
So, I have the pleasure of working with an excellent leadership team, an excellent communications team, and we focus on the reason why we're in this business, and that is the power of the plant and to meet consumers' needs. So that is our main focus. It doesn't come without its issues, but we are in marketing. We are hyper-focused on why we're in this space and how Curaleaf can continue to be leaders in bringing solutions to people that are healthier than their alternatives.
So I know you are a woman in demand, so we can make this quick, but I do want to ask you about a product type. So speaking of Boris Jordan, he made a pretty awesome statement at our September Cannabis Capital Conference in Chicago. Basically, it was basically saying beverages are going to be 50% of the market eventually. I'd love to hear from you. Obviously you must be seeing something that maybe some of us aren't, because there's a lot of agreement, a lot of disagreement based on that statement, but it was super interesting to see the reactions he got from that.
So I do think beverage is going to be a long-term win here for sure. I think it's a very accessible category that people can relate to. You've seen the burst in seltzers for as low calorie, low hangover alternative to some of the other alcoholic beverages out there. Cannabis seltzers and ready to drinks are tricky right now, just based on logistics, right? Storage, refrigeration, that's very hard in dispensaries. But we've seen a lot of success in beverage alternatives like an infuse. We have a product called Squeeze, and you essentially infuse it into your drink like you would a Mio or a Crystal Light or another beverage infuser. And people can relate to that. It's low dose, it's discreet. You can travel. I'm not going to say across state lines, but you can travel with it pretty easily. And it's tasty. And like I said, no calorie, no hangover. So I think while it is a small segment today, it makes up a very small portion of our categorical mix. We are seeing a lot of new consumers come into the space through our beverage and edibles products. And I think you're going to continue to see that to grow for sure.
Then I have one more question, and then I can let you go. As Javi, as anything else, when we see new states come online, like we're seeing five states being voted on today, do you have to do any type of incredible preparation to start marketing to a new market, to put Curaleaf in front of these consumers? Because I'm sure they may or may not be priorities for you to get in immediately, but I would imagine you're looking at them all the while.
We do. I mean, there's various various stages. We're involved in all of them. So whether it's a new license application in a new market altogether, we are very involved, because what you have to do essentially is present how you would go to market with products and with formulations and with packaging and with marketing and all of that, versus a state that's currently medical going adult use. We are involved in all stages of that process. You know, obviously hyper focused on those markets where we're serving patients and customers today, but our marketing team is serving all stages of that process.
Great. Javi, anything else for Kate Lynch while we have her?
A bunch of questions, but we'll need to have her back on maybe in December.
Let's do it.
I would love that. And I'm going to figure out how to turn the lights on in the background of me, because it looks like I'm camping or something right now.
Well, Kate, we really appreciate
it. I like it. It's intriguing. It's got a little bit of a Halloween,
I'm actually sitting at my campfire right now. You guys just don't know it.
Oh, I dig that. I dig that deal. Well, Kate, thank you so much for being with us again. We'll see you again. We'll talk to you again soon. Until then, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Two great interviews, two very insightful interviews. Marketing, the MSO, these multi-state operators, these international companies like Curaleaf. I wanted to ask some distribution questions, but that was going to take more time, and we had to let her go. And then Jason Beck, an interesting perspective for sure regarding policy. I will say I don't think I necessarily agree with him on the misread of my Republican read on the situation. But that being said, I mean, the man has been in this for a while.
It doesn't matter. Honestly, whenever I throw something out, like, hey, I think this, and whoever I'm interviewing goes like, honestly, I think you're wrong. And it doesn't throw me off. Pretty much the opposite. I'm like, okay, lay it on me. Let's see what you got. I actually interviewed last Friday, right, following Diddy's investment, right? We didn't discuss this, by the way. Diddy, formerly known as Puff Daddy, or whatever you know him. I think Puff Daddy has a very good name right now. He should go back to that. So Diddy spent about $185 million through Combs Enterprises to acquire assets from Cresco Labs and Columbia Care in three states. I think it was New York, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts. If I'm wrong, I might be wrong. It doesn't really matter at this point. You can go to benzinga.com/cannabis, check out my article and my interview. I interviewed the president of Combs Enterprises, Tariq. And at one point, I say something about, capital availability for minority entrepreneurs and how it is not available. And he interrupts me, you know, like just straight on. He goes like, you know what? You're wrong there. I'm like, how so? Love this. Do tell. He goes, did you know the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurs in America right now is Black women? It's like, oh, really? Like, this is great news. I was not aware. Tell me more about it, right? And I really like it. I enjoy it, right? Your reading of Republicans, I think, is very fair. Some of them are campaigning against it, but what he said is also a good point, right? They're campaigning on what matters locally, but then most of their work when they get to Congress is on the federal level.
Fair enough, man. Honestly, I learned something there as well. We need a whole content series on that point alone. And I'd love to get different people in. I'd love to put Tariq and Christine De La Rosa in a room and just watch from afar is what I would like to do on that point.
April 11 and 12, Benzinga is coming back to Miami to the Fountain Blue Hotel, bzcannabis.com, to learn all about our upcoming 16th edition of the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. Once again, bzcannabis.com, April 11 and 12. And on the 13th, we are doing the Benzinga Psychedelics Capital Conference, which you cannot miss. If you're looking to raise money, that is the place to be. I'm not going to lie, there's other great conferences in psychedelics, for science, for like, you know, general culture. But if you're looking to raise money, there's no place like Benzinga conferences. You can take my word. You can hold me accountable on this word. And if you don't raise money, call me out. I don't care. I don't mind, because I am saying the truth here.
All right. But let's talk about the how with this guy. All right, you can call him out. Just call me before you try and just go and raise money. That being said, BZ-Crypto, if you want to head to New York City in December for our Future of Crypto conference. But we got to wrap, y'all. This has been an insightful show. A lot happening in the cannabis space right now. A lot of expectations that we're waiting on to happen in the cannabis space right now. But you can find it all on benzinga.com/cannabis or right here on Thursday at 4 Eastern time. With that being said, Javier, love you, man. AT, thank you for producing. If you're in Vegas, hit us up next week. Until then, y'all, peace.